Blog Talk Radio.
And excuse me, gentlemen, your business is politics. Mine is running a saloon.
And it seems like everybody's business is politics nowadays. Welcome to this week's Left Ahead Show. This is Mike Paul, also of Marion, Massachusetts, and Harumph. And I'm talking about two governors today. This we have one more day of Deval Patrick and ending up his 8 years, two terms as Massachusetts governor. And the next day, on the 7th, we are on the 8th, I guess. I guess at the end of the 7th, Charlie Baker takes over. Deval Patrick, of course, is a Democrat, and Charlie Baker is a Republican. And if you don't know, Massachusetts loves their Republican governors. We like the idea, the idealized Republican governor. And if you look on our history, we have about every other one in the modern era since we had Democratic and Republican parties. We've mixed them up, but we gravitate more toward Democratic legislators and cabinet officials. But we like the idea of a Republican governor. Somehow, the fantasy is that that will balance everything out. That if you have a heavily Democratic registered legislature, that having a Republican was going to bring the New England fiscal conservatism to the fore, and somehow that's true to ourselves and good for the citizens and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, it's sort of silly, particularly when somebody like Charlie Baker. Many in the state Republican Party don't care for Baker's politics. The Republican platform is the Tea Party one. It's very, very right-wing. And Mark Fisher, who ran against him for the Republican nomination, pointed out, you know, I am a Massachusetts Republican, and I support the platform 100%. Charlie Baker supports almost none of it, and that's true. So a lot of Republicans around here call him a rhino, Republican in name only. But that doesn't make a whole lot of difference. They're roughly 15% of the electorate is registered as Republicans. So, yeah. Anyway, on the other hand, only 30-some percent are registered as Democrats. So like 2-1. But the vast or a slight majority of all voters are unenrolled. They love to call themselves independents, but actually they're unenrolled. They're not affiliated with any party, not even our new United Independent Party, and Charlie Baker could win the Republican nomination, and turns out the governorship still being distrusted and disliked by most Republicans in the state. So there you have it. And so the question comes, what is a kind of a Republican going to do here? And you know, in theory, if the legislature is you know, three quarters or more Democrats, supposedly he could get nothing done. But that's not the way it really works around here. If Deval Patrick was in here for 8 years, and he was on this show a few times, and I talked to him about the pushback he was getting from the legislature. He would propose things, and seemed like they wanted to do kind of like a Mitch McConnell on him, and it wasn't going places. But, you know, it's interestingly enough, eventually almost everything he wanted got done, which is what he told us here. And it was early on in his administration. And he'd laugh and say, yeah, there's pushback, but I'm used to that. And but in the end, they almost always do what I want. And that's true, and that's the way it happened. It took a while, and he came in as the great compromiser. And not so much that he compromised with everything, but he made everybody else compromise. He was on the board at Coca-Cola, for example, and he did some other things with companies and nonprofits, and he got the reputation as making people come together and agree. And he told me when he was campaigning that that's the way he's going to run it, and I think, that's not going to work around here. But he pretty much got it done. And there were a lot of things, more recently, in the second administration, the Great Recession was going on full tilt, and his great plans for new infrastructure and all kinds of expenditures just didn't work. And he had to go back to the unions and say, even the public employee unions here, we got to charge more for your health care. You have to chip in more. And that wasn't going to work, right? But he made it work. And he got the legislators and the unions and everybody to come together. And in the end, he got it passed. And they all got together and stood up and said, okay, it was painful, but it was necessary, and we did it, and we're happy with it. And that was Deval Patrick's style. And I suspect whatever he does next is going to be the same as he did that. Now, his dear friend, Barack Obama, followed him 2 years in politics, or in high office. Obama was a senator from Illinois, and about 2 years before he ran for president, Deval ran for governor, and now he's quitted, and Obama has 2 more years in the White House. And as you saw, Barack Obama also, you know, learned from his friend, his slightly older friend, on how to campaign, which was also kind of amazing. And that's a legacy I think is going to last far out, far beyond the other things that Deval Patrick is known for. In his first go-around, he was astonishing, and he supposedly wasn't going to go anyplace because he wasn't a politician. He had never run for office before, and he didn't have a chance. He was black, too. That was another issue. And for being around here, he committed another sin, which was he was not from here. He was from Chicago. But nevertheless, he got it done, and he got it done by engaging his whole electorate, not only the black people, not only the regular voters, the old people, but the young people and everybody left and center. He got them done. And part of that, a big part of it, was the he went with the social media. It was relatively new at the time, 8 years ago, just coming into it. And he leveraged it like crazy. And he was out there tweeting, and he was talking to us bloggers and podcasters, and he was the darling of the youth, and they really turned out. The young people, the college-age people, elected Barack Obama, or elected Deval Patrick. And, you know, later, 2 years later, Barack Obama took a page from that and kind of leveraged it. By then, there was some of the shine was off social media, but he still, you know, followed in Deval Patrick's steps and did a good job on that. And I think that's going to last. People learn from that. It may not be that it's Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and other stuff the next time. There may be something else going, but the lesson is there is to learn from what the technologies are and to go up and down the age spectrum of the electorate. And it worked. It worked very well for Deval Patrick. And then the next time, 4 years later, he didn't go with that strategy per se. He had another idea, or his campaign manager, John Walsh, from the first go-around, had the idea that you kind of do a sort of like a telephone tree, but you get the people who are activists to recruit other people, turn them into activists, and get them all excited about your candidate. And that sounded like a really stupid idea. We had pads full of yellow paper where you signed up with people, and the activists would say, okay, you sign up with me, and I will guarantee that you don't get all those telephone calls and all those mailings. What you get is, you know, there's something important, I'll let you know it, and it's selectively. And if you have a question, you come to me, and I'll answer your question about it. And I'll be damned. People got very excited about that, and I was one of those people who you know, farmed out to others, and that worked too. So I think Deval Patrick's campaigning style and his two campaign managers are leaving a big mark, and people do that. And the Republicans got the hang of it, and they've done it pretty well by following Patrick's lead, or Patrick Obama's lead, when they're doing that. And they got the hang of it very well. So I think there's a lot to be said for that. Anyway, So poor Deval Patrick got in, you know, the worst of it. He got in with Mitt Romney's leavings and a lot of debt and a so-so economy and high unemployment. And Mitt Romney's walking away with this proposed health care, Obamacare, became, you know, Romneycare became Obamacare. And Deval Patrick had to implement it. Then there was the Great Recession, and the economy went to hell, and his plan for infrastructure and universal pre-K and lots of stuff disappeared, didn't have any money. And so Deval Patrick, you know, had run again, and he stood up to it, and Massachusetts came out better than everybody else. We recovered stronger from the big recession, and which is kind of nice, because previously when Romney was in, we did not recover well from the previous big dip. The high tech sector took a huge hit and wasn't really recovering, and didn't until Deval Patrick got in and started his biotech initiatives and reworked employment and got jobs bills passed by the legislature here and got federal monies and used the grants post-recession to do well for the economy. And it's doing very well here. We have like one of the lowest unemployments in the nation, if not the lowest from time to time. And the high-tech industry is coming back solidly, and things are doing well. And even with the last dip in the economy, our state economy is doing very nicely. And it goes to Deval Patrick, and you can see what he's done. There are people who say he had too many young people in his administration and they're too many inexperienced and some things suffered. And he admits that on some of them. The Department of Children's and Family, DCF, was a mess and is coming out of that. And there are some kids who died from that, lack of oversight. And that apparently was due to poor supervision. So he admits that one. So there were some areas where they didn't do well. But in the main, everything came out pretty well. And Charlie Baker's inheriting a much stronger education system, much better economy, even better infrastructure. I mean, Patrick has been able to get some federal money and state money together and start patching those bridges and highways that were in bad shape. So Baker's coming in pretty nicely. And the amusing thing to me about that is Charlie Baker is setting up straw men. That's been his style. And that's, you know, that's what politicians often do. So good guys like Patrick and Obama didn't, but they're unusual. But Baker came in and he pointed immediately to say the rollout of the health care, the health connector, and just terrible, absolute disaster. And so, you know, the sign up part was a mess, a royal mess. And it was a poorly designed website, and that was a problem. But the health care, you know, we've got like 99% of the kids and 98% of everybody covered, much higher than the rest of the nation. It works here, and it has been working here for a long time. But that's Charlie Baker's straw man is there. So he's looking to claim any improvements during his administration as, gee, look at the wonderful things that I did. But he's starting from way high up. He's like with the old joke about starting at third base and getting knocked in, so you claim a home run. So we can expect that from Charlie Baker on several aspects. Education is another one. Deval Patrick has worked very, very hard. He's been the education governor, and he's done a great job, better than any other governor in the 36 years that I've been here. And he has improved education from preschool all the way through, well, I want to say college. I don't know. There's still problems with the college is costing too much. But all the people enrolled in public schools certainly are doing much better under Deval Patrick than they did before. And Charlie Baker, he's got a scheme. And you can't call it really a strategy. It's a real scheme. He's saying, as I heard him at Suffolk expound upon this, and it was Suffolk University, and he was there during the fora where the individual candidates for governor would come, and he was talking about that. And of course, he's bringing up education because it's a university, and talking about that, and it's a kind of a sort of makes sense in a really simple-minded and vague way, which I fear is going to be Baker's style. Is he said, okay, we know what works at this school, this rich kid school out here, and up in a terrible school in Lawrence. These things. So what we'll do is we'll study the good things that happen here, and we'll replicate them everywhere, and that's going to solve our problem. And I think that is either very dishonest or incredibly naive, but that's his plan, and so we can supposedly hold him to it. But I remain to be convinced about that. I think there are going to be too many differences from one school to another, and I don't know that we're going to have the resources, the human resources or the cash, to do that kind of replication he's talking about. And I don't know that saying, let's just copy this one and that'll be much better than what we have. That doesn't work elsewhere in business or anywhere in the private sector. So I remain to be convinced. But I think he's looking for any kind of numbers that he can point up and saying, oh, the reading scores are better here or there. Aren't I wonderful? What a good boy am I? So let's see whether he can pull that off. I don't see how his scheme is really going to be the answer. I think we got to look to more things that require money and maybe some new taxes, and that would be like universal pre-K, for example. We know that works, and it works everywhere in every state, and we aren't quite there yet. Duvall didn't quite get that done, but you know, Charlie should be looking for the money for that. Instead, he did pull a Republican on that one. He said he's absolutely not going to raise taxes on anything. Now, we also heard that from his previous Republican governor antecedent, Mitt Romney, who said he absolutely wasn't going to raise taxes. And that was kind of true. But what Mitt Romney's administration was made a wholesale, widely dispersed, incredible range of fee increases on everything. Drivers and customers of all types, and anybody who did any business and any permits, got any sort of licenses, everything, all the fees went up. So they were huge tax increases. They just weren't called tax increases. I'm hoping that Baker isn't going to try and pull that crap. An alternative would be for him to stick with his plan and say absolutely no new taxes, and that's what Republicans tend to get elected on around here, and does that, and then things can go to hell, like no universal pre-K, and we don't have the money for the roads, and so forth. He's against the automatic increase in gas taxes. We got a lot of stuff we got to do, and we actually have that terrible misnomer of Taxachusetts, when in fact we're in the middle and a little bit below average per capita taxes for the nation. And we actually could stand to cough up some more taxes around here and get more things done. So I don't know that no new taxes is the answer to anything other than his hope for getting reelected in 4 years. So we'll see how that goes. But Baker's got very vague plans. He had, you know, the things that he promises are light. We're going to have somehow businesses are going to do well. We might be able to cut their tax rates a little bit and they'll do better. Of course, we unfortunately know that when businesses get reduced tax rates, they keep the money and they don't reinvest it. They don't hire. In fact, our biggest disgrace here and nationwide, as well as in Massachusetts, during the aftermath of the Great Recession, when our unemployment got so high during the Bush years, but actually it was during the Bush years before the Great Recession, but when things were really, really bad, and there wasn't an answer for it. And it was certainly not going to be to give those Bush tax cuts, because he handed those out, and the companies just sat on them. And then they said, oh, well, you know, after the Great Recession now, banks are too tight on us. We can't get cash. We can't get a loan from a bank, so we can't expand. We can't hire anybody. And what it really meant was, if you wanted a loan from a bank, you had to prove that you weren't one of those sleazy subprime people, that you actually had a plan that was going to work and you had a good chance of paying back your loan. So you had to document it and have a good business plan. And I don't think that's too much, particularly after all the stupid loans that the banks made. I mean, yeah, it was the bank's fault, but they, you know, it made sense for them to look to have good business plans, good proposals. So I think that was a red herring by the companies. The fact that it is, when they got their money, when they got their tax breaks, they didn't hire. And the unemployment stayed high during all those Bush years and the first year of the Obama administration. And it was a disgrace. It was a shame that these people were so un-American that they would not join in. They would not take any of the pain, that they just want the workers to do that. It's like that terrible fantasy about, you know, if only the workers weren't so lazy. You know, American productivity is like the highest in the world or like one of the second highest. It's like always very high. The problem is not the workers or at all. It's just what the businesses are doing and the underpaying. And then we go back to the standard question about, you know, what do you do with the underpaying your workers and the minimum wage, the Walmart model? And the answer is, well, they can't really afford to shop in your stores anymore. They can't buy a car. Henry Ford did it. He paid his workers enough so they could buy his cars. And they did. And that was a lesson we learned at the early part of the 19th century, or the 20th century, and we seem to have forgotten it totally. We like that idea of underpaying the workers to the point that they can't put cash back into our economy. And then we struggle and we say, yeah, it's those terrible workers. Those people are on welfare, and the ones on welfare are like the McDonald's and Walmart workers who can't afford to live on the wages they get because they're artificially held down. So we got a whole bunch of states in the country now that are raising their minimum wage, and not really to a livable area, but it's getting closer. So that's a good thing. And it's not going to solve all those problems, but we can see what's going on there is we want people to have jobs. We want them to have cash. We want them to be consumers. We want that part of capitalism to work very nicely. Thank you very much. We don't want the greed capitalism where the people take their piles of money and take it out of the economy, even if it's not offshore, but just hold on to it and, you know, earn their money off of investments while the workers struggle. And that's not the answer either. So Charlie Baker could deal with that. None of his platform has any of that stuff in it. He's all about, you know, being super nice to business. But we saw what he did, at the Harvard Vanguard, Harvard Community Health Plan, transitioning to Harvard Vanguard. And, you know, his solution of taking it over was to cut thousands of workers in several states and jack up the premium prices, which had a ricochet effect, and it's shattered around and it knocked on so that people in other health care agencies, Harvard Vanguard gets away with these outrageous prices. I think we can do that too. So they all jacked them up, and so we all ended up paying much more for it. And Charlie Baker has the nerve enough to come in and say he's going to control health care costs, and he's like the a major guy in charge of jacking them up. Because, you know, he was never a physician. He was never really into healthcare. He was an insurance executive. We have to remember that. So his brain is in the money part of it. And how do you maximize your profits for your corporation? So I'm not so sure that Charlie Baker's the guy to do much for insurance costs. Because if that means slamming the good guys that he likes at all these health insurers. Thank God that our health connector and their plans give people some options, because Charlie Baker's answer is, well, we'll just make it transparent. we'll make it so that all these people have to advertise what their surgery costs, what their hospital beds are, so then you can make a decision. And so the pressure is then on the sick and or dying person to go scrambling around trying to figure out the best bargain he can get before he dies. And that's outrageous. That's not the way universal health care works in other countries where they where it works right. And that's not the way we're headed with Romney Care. And that's not the way we started out with even the Obamacare version. So Baker's got a whole lot to show me. So I got to remain to be convinced. He's supposed to bring in good people. He's trying real hard to show that he brings in both the unenrolled and Democrats as well as Republicans into his administration, so he can say, he can pull a Scott Brown and say, see how bipartisan I am, or tripartisan he is. That's all very interesting. If he's chosen the right people, if they come in and give him the ideas that he seems to be lacking, because he seems wishy-washy, I don't know. Anyway, enough of that. As you can tell, I'm unimpressed with Charlie Baker yet. He's got to produce something for me. I'll go back now that he's in office, now that he doesn't have to worry about getting elected and showing contact with filthy liberals like me. Maybe he'll come on the show. He turned me down repeatedly both times he ran for governor. He doesn't want to talk to me. I think the name Left Ahead bothered him a lot. So we'll see. I'll try to get him on, try to talk to him, and I'll monitor him and see what we can do. I remain to be convinced, and Charlie has to do something about it. He has to do some real stuff, and just sitting on his no taxes pledge is not going to do it. So I got to see it. Otherwise, I know it's a new year, so I've talked to a few people, and I'll be having some guests coming up. Probably not next week, but sometime in January and start February, I'll have political guests coming up again. I've got several that I have lined up, and I'll fix the dates with them, and I'll let you know. So look at leftahead.com and back here at Blog Talk Radio, Lefties, and I'll let you know when's what's coming up and who's going to be doing it. And meanwhile, you can join me in wishing a bon voyage to Deval Patrick and skeptical hello to Charlie Baker. We'll just see whether he can do it, whether he really has it together.
Why not? Do or do not. There is no try.